Hello, and welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. You may have noticed that we didn't post an LQ radio last night as I had posted that we would on my blog. One of the panelists had a last-minute conflict, and the show was moved to this Sunday. We still will be doing the same show that we would have been, same panelists, same everything else, so it's just a switch in date, so stay tuned for that. The LinuxQuestions.org podcast is now listed in the iTunes podcast directory, for those of you that do use iTunes. We didn't see the huge spike in downloads that I had seen some people mention, but it is good to be listed. And I downloaded iTunes just to kind of check on the status of this, and actually I had to download it to submit the podcast to Apple. I'm not 100% sure how they're getting their relevancy numbers. If you see any kind of information on that, if you could forward that to me, I'd appreciate it. Some of the results seem interesting, to say the least. Next story. It's a little late, but it's finally official. LQ is once again a media sponsor for the upcoming OSCON. Looks to be another great conference from O'Reilly, and one that I'm proud to be associated with. This year, I hope to actually make the trip. It's not finalized. I've not yet been able to make it to an OSCON, but it's something that I really want to do. And at this point, I would say it's probably about 95% sure that I'll be there. So I look forward to that. We've been getting a lot of good feedback on the new site, which I unveiled on the last podcast. The URL for that is bookmarks.linuxquestions.org. It is still beta, but I would say we'll be taking it out of beta probably within the next couple of days, actually. Based on the feedback that we've gotten since the last podcast, we have made some changes. One functional change that we made to the underlying system is that all tags are now case insensitive. When we first made the site live, Linux with a capital L would actually be different than Linux with a lowercase l. And I didn't think that really was useful, so we made some changes, and one of the great things about open source, we patched the version of, we're using a script called Rubrik as the base for bookmarks.linuxquestions.org. We patched the, we sent the patches upstream to get the author's take on it, and we'll see, he hasn't responded yet, but we'll see what his thoughts on it. But the benefits here is that we used open source, we saw something that didn't fit our particular needs. We were not only able to see why the software was operating that way, but able to change it so it, you know, so things worked in a way that we did want. And then we could pass that back to the author, get his take on it, and even offer it to him if he's so inclined. It's kind of a win-win situation. And as I mentioned, the site should be coming out of beta in the next couple days. We fixed the last known bug probably about 4 or 5 days ago. Made some changes so that the site is extremely stable and really performant now, which was one of the big problems in the beginning. So we'll look forward to that soon. And thanks for the feedback, everyone. Now on to the news. As I mentioned during the last podcast, I was going to contact Chris DeBona at Google to ask him why Google didn't support any Linux apps. And this was spurred by a post that Doc Searles had made on his blog. Chris not only responded, but had an open and honest dialogue with Doc and I. He pointed out Google's place for open source software, which is code.google.com. I think probably most people already knew about that, but I wanted to highlight that here. Another thing he pointed out that hadn't actually crossed my mind when I originally emailed him was that many of Google's client apps, such as Picasa, came from acquired companies that had written it for Windows only and weren't actually written by Google in the first place. And you can't expect Google to buy a company that has a Windows only product and then have the product to become cross-platform overnight. He also pointed out the many individual contributions that Google employees make and continue to make to open source, and that many of them make those contributions on company time. But better than that, lo and behold, just a couple days after his response, Google releases the Google Toolbar for Firefox, and that includes support for Windows, Mac, and Linux. So it was kind of a timely conversation, and it's great to see that Google did release something for not only Linux, but Mac also, so they kind of covered all three. And not only did they release the Toolbar, though, they gave a ton of credit to the open source Google Bar, which was a plugin for Firefox that already existed. And here's a quote from the Google blog was, thanks for, quote unquote, filling this gap in our products for so long. And not only did they give them the credit, if you go to the download page for the official toolbar now, there still is a link to the open source one. So they're giving you a choice, basically saying, here's our official one, but here's this open source one that already existed. So kudos to Google for that. Great decision. And like Doc said, it's a tall order to expect, but Google is a tall company, and I agree. Next news story. A Slashdot post today brought my attention to this. It's a new service that is still beta that's called Fundable. So what is Fundable? Here's a little bit of information directly from their site. Fundable is a new service that lets groups of people pool money for various purposes in what are called group actions. Similar to an online auction, a group action has its own page describing how much money will be collected and what the money will do. No participant takes a risk. If the collection for a group action falls short of its target on deadline, all money is refunded. Fundable's all-or-nothing approach to collecting money lets you participate in a group purchase or fundraiser without worrying about what other people will do. You either get what you paid for, or you get your money back. And there have been a couple of sites, Linux Fund comes to mind, which I know is stagnant now, and there's some money sitting in limbo. And I do remember, I think it was Source Exchange was one from the past, and I know there were a couple others that I can't think of off the top of my head. The one thing that I really like about Fundable is they set a date, and they say either X happens by this date, or everyone who donated gets their money back. So I think it really, one of the problems with the other one, where say someone needed $1,000 for a task, I think people were a little bit leery that if that $1,000 never did get raised or took, you know, 18 months or an extended period of time to get raised, their money was just going to sit in limbo. So with this, it has a hard date, and most of them, of the projects that I saw on the site, either had a 2-week or a 4-week limit, so it's a pretty short date. So you either get what you donated, you know, basically within a month, or you get your money back. So I think it's a great idea. The number of projects that were on the site now is relatively small, but like I said, it is beta, and I think people are kind of just starting to learn about it. But it's a great idea, and I wish them the best of luck, and hopefully some quality open source projects will be able to get some funding through Fundable. The last story I have for you today is from ZDNet. From the article, open source has won another convert in the local government sector, with soft migrations to Linux imminent across Vienna's municipal authority. The Austrian capital city of Vienna's local government is due to start migrating its desktop PCs to open source software in the second quarter of this year. What they're doing there is basically they're calling it a soft migration. This is where users have the option of switching. Their options here are going from Microsoft Office 2000 to OpenOffice.org, or Windows 2000 to Linux. Now you can do both and run OpenOffice on Linux, of course, but they are also giving the option of just running OpenOffice.org on Windows. They estimate that of their 16,000 desktops is what they have in the municipal offices. They think that about 7,500 could immediately be migrated to OpenOffice.org. They think just under 5,000 could be migrated immediately to Linux. Now, of course, the numbers aren't going to be that high because it is a voluntary migration, but it's great to see, and I think this is the first time I have seen that they're just giving you a choice. So they're not forcing you on one product. They're not, you know, saying this is the way we have to go. But for the people that do want to run Linux and or OpenOffice.org, it's now a legitimate supported choice. You can call the help desk. You know, your support options are identical regardless of which one you run. So I think more and more governments are going to go this route. And I have to say, I think probably the soft migration is going to be pretty popular. So as opposed to on one day saying, hey, everyone has to switch, they're going to let the people that are comfortable with technology and probably the IT staff and other people that have used Linux at home kind of be the trailblazers. And I can guarantee the first day that a huge Windows virus hits the office, and the people all running Linux are sitting there doing work, and the people running Windows are walking around because they can't get to their PCs, the next day will be the day that tickets for migrations pour in. And slowly but surely, I think you'll see offices where you do have a choice migrating from predominantly Windows, where just the tech people have Linux, to a case where, you know, it's 50-50 at one point, and then probably a point where, you know, Windows is the vast minority. So it's great to see. Thanks to Vienna. We'll keep a close eye on this one as we do all the major government migrations. But I think this one will definitely be successful because it's not forced, and people will be able to do it when they're comfortable with it. And that will also cut down the perception of it. People get a perception sometimes when they're forced to change that the change is bad, or when if they think they have a choice or they do legitimately have a choice, they tend to be a little bit more receptive. So good luck. That's all I have for now, but thanks for listening. And remember, if you like the LQ podcast, please head over to podcastle.com and vote for us. Thanks.